CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus in Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Nancy Collier. She is the author of The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And Nancy is a psychotherapist, interfaith minister, veteran meditator, and author of Inviting a Monkey to Tea, Befriending Your Mind, and Discovering Lasting Contentment, as well as her latest book, The Power of Off. And you can find her at nancycollier.com. And welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thanks for having me.
So I've had a little bit of virtual technical stress today, so it's perfect timing to just jump right into our moment of centering, which is how I like to start the show. So if you're in a place that's safe to do so, you can close your eyes. And if not, please keep them open. And if it feels good, you can place your hand on your heart. And just take a nice, deep breath, deep into the bottom of your lungs. And as you let it out, just releasing any tension or stress or worries. And as we're breathing, just focusing on being present here, in this moment together, whether you're listening live or on podcast. And another deep breath, just breathing love and positivity into your heart and releasing any tension again on the exhale. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thanks so much for being with us today, Nancy.
Like, great to be here.
So you have been a psychotherapist and a minister, and you've been meditating for many, many years. So when did you start noticing this tension around technology?
Well, I think the birth of the book actually came from a funny incident. It was about maybe 8 years ago or so, and I had just joined Facebook, wasn't really sort of hip to what was happening there. And a dear friend of mine, who was a middle-aged woman with a career and a family and so on, I saw a post from her that said, up for an early morning bike ride, finishing it off with a refreshing acai juice. And I remember in that moment really feeling like I have no idea what's going on. I don't know what's happening on the planet. I am watching the world change in the sense that that would make sense to her to post that to a public audience, that that was a normal thing. I realized we were all about to experience the change of everything. And, you know, at the same time, I was witnessing in my practice that people were coming in with their phones left on. They didn't turn their phones off during their 1 hour a week to themselves. And people were describing more and more the sense of feeling wired, both tired and wired, and living in a kind of state of fight or flight, and also feeling that their lives lacked meaning. Even though they were amped up and entertained and so on, that something meaningful was being drained out of life and relationships were suffering. So I was witnessing all of this kind of change. And then, of course, in my own house with children, I was living with addicts. I was watching as to get the phone away from my teenager was no different, I imagine, getting the crack needle away from a crackhead. It was a fight. Every day we were fighting around technology and what it meant and so on. And then, of course, just seeing the changes in our local community. I'm somebody who lives in New York City. I love to meet people out at jury duty or the bus or what have you. And watching as that opportunity for a local community was drying up as we had more and more access, you know, to the global world at every minute. We weren't talking to our friend standing right next to us. So lots and lots of changes I was witnessing and felt that I needed to really sit down and start studying this change in our very being, who we are as a species.
Mm. Thank you, Nancy. And in the book, The Power of Off, you also mention how you touched on it about your clients coming in for therapy and they wouldn't even turn off their phones because they had this sense of that they are so important that even an hour of not being completely accessible could be detrimental to everything. And it seems like we've all become that way, and yet it's also expected of us. I mean, even today, someone sent me a job posting they thought I'd be perfect for, and when I read that it comes with a cell phone and a laptop and all this, I translate that to, you are never going to have a moment of peace.
Absolutely. You're wise there. You know, the Trojan horse, right, is the cell phone. It gets into the house with this sense of, oh, it's fabulous, we can work remotely, it gives us so much freedom and so on. But what happens, as you're insightfully saying there, is then you become a slave to it. Then you're free and spacious nowhere. And what I see happening, and certainly lots of people are reporting on it, is that this state of uber availability, right, where every minute we can be reached, you know, if it's not by our kids, it's by our work. If it's not by our work, it's by just some random, you know, every friend is supposed to be able to reach us at every moment. And the result of that is that our nervous systems are in a kind of state of tilt. You know, it's not just our devices that need to be powered off. It's us. We actually need to be unavailable at certain times of the day, just to reboot our stress level, just to calm down. And, you know, the other thing that's really interesting is to notice how it's in the spaces between all the noise, it's in the silences, you know, that we find our greatest creative forces. It's where we find peace. It's in the breaks between all the data that's coming in, all the contact, that we find a chance to kind of return to our sense of being, to that basic place, our refuge, where we're okay. And we're taking that out of our lives by being on call, available at every moment.
So I'm curious, Nancy, with your therapy practice, have you started doing any rules around, okay, the phone is off when you're here, or do you let them, because it is their time,
Well, you know, it really depends on where the client is. If the client is interested in experiencing that sensation of having the phone off and perhaps the anxiety or the whatever comes for them with not being reachable, then we go that way. But as you say, it's their time. And I have one client, you know, he's a very big TV producer, and he has two phones on during the session, one on each arm of the chair. And he spends probably, you know, 20 minutes of his hour taking calls and with this feeling that, you know, any story that comes in that time could be the story that, you know, makes him even more famous and so on and so on. So when I'm meeting with a person, I'm meeting with that person as they are. They're asking me to help them as they are. He doesn't feel it's possible for him to turn them off. So we work with that. I will ask a client, I've had clients in the past, you know, who are using substances, and I have said to them, I cannot work with you if you're using a substance. But with this, because moms say, I won't come if I can't be reached by my kid, and someone like this TV producer says that, I've been allowing that to be in the room with us and then seeing, well, what's it like for you to have, you know, half your time taken up by this career, more with what's actually happening. But I would say, you know, from a larger perspective, that this idea, again, you know, that we're always missing something. We're always on call for what else might supplement the moment. It has other kind of spiritual consequences to it, that this moment is never enough. This moment is never complete. There's always something better that could come in. And that's the feeling that people are more and more living with. What am I missing out on? This can't possibly be the whole thing.
Nancy, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I feel like that's part of the human condition. That's always been a problem for most people, I think, is that fear of missing out. I remember having to go to bed before I was ready to when I was a kid, and I felt like I was missing out on some big party that was going on. So I know this is not anything new, but because we're so bombarded now with this constant stream of accessibility and information, it's like taking over.
It is taking over. And we also experience not just the moment is inherently lacking, but we experience ourselves as fundamentally nowhere. You know, it used to be we could walk on the street and say we'd have a little lovely experience with somebody. Somebody needed help, and we offered that help. And we just would walk another block, maybe being with ourselves about what that felt like. We might never tell another soul about that little moment where we opened a door or what have you. But now, you know, the instant that we have that experience, we're right there on social media, you know, hashtag sweet moment, you know, kicking it with kindness, you know, we've got all these ways of captioning that moment. And we essentially then throw that experience, our own private experience, out onto social media to see what it will then mean. What's the meaning of that, right? We turn that over. So we're not experiencing ourselves as a destination any longer, not just the moment. So we actually have become fearful of being in just our own company. People describe to me, you know, oh gosh, it's just with myself, as if that's a vacuum, that's a non-entity. You see people, you know, the minute we're in line or we're waiting for a movie to start, we're texting, we're getting on an app, we're playing Candy Crush, whatever it is, because our own company is no longer experienced as, I wouldn't even say enough, I would say as anything. So that's a very profound change in the way we actually are relating to ourselves.
To hear extended interviews and behind-the-scenes chat, go to my website, mariebenard.com, and sign up for my mailing list, mariebenard.com. Thanks for listening.
Fate. Sex. God. Everyone has a secret. In a series of tantalizing vignettes, over 100 characters search for love and information.
They discover themselves and each other through tango, torture, and karaoke.
UBC Theater and Film presents Love and Information.
Written by influential and award-winning playwright Carol Churchill.
And directed by MFA candidate Lauren Taylor.
For tickets, visit theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
We are speaking with Nancy Collier. She is the author of The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And Nancy, I'm curious, we're talking about that inability for many of us. I mean, it's just so common that we don't even really realize how many times. I think you mentioned there's been a New York Times article that just came out about your book, so congratulations on that. And I think you said something like, we check our phones 150 times a day on average.
Well, and it's going up. The last statistic I heard was 190 times a day. Yes. And I mean, this, we are no different than any other addicts. We have all the signs of addiction. The first one being that we're giving up activities that used to nourish us so that we can use more. Our substance use is increasing. We're hiding and lying about our use. I cannot tell you how many people I know who go into the bathroom stall, you know, to check their phone because really they're embarrassed. We are continuing to use, even though we know that it has a detrimental effect on our sleep, our health, our relationships, and so on. We are, our world is getting smaller. That's the thing. As with any addiction, you know, we have withdrawal symptoms when we can't use. You ever see somebody who forgot their phone? They look like, yeah, somebody who needs an EpiPen, you know, running around like a lunatic. So our lives are more and more centered around our addiction. And of course, you know, we have all the normal justifications. Technology makes life so much better. There's so much to be learned. It makes us so much more connected. We have all of these wonderful ways of explaining our addiction. But like all addictions, it never goes anywhere positive. And our world shrinks. And the worst part of it, perhaps, of an addiction is that it's harder and harder for us to find joy in the rest of life. So in the small things, in the experiences outside our substance, start to be drained of meaning. And, you know, it's really interesting to notice that. And one other piece that I wanted to bring in there is there's also something happening where technology, besides being an addiction, is setting up an expectation and an experience, I would say, of immediate gratification. So kind of like a substance in that way. But our, particularly our millennials, are beginning to feel that everything should be available just on a moment's notice, and that there really shouldn't be much work in getting what we want. And so, you know, we want a product, it's here in the morning, we want validation, we just go ahead and post on social media, we've got 1,000 thumbs ups in, you know, a matter of moments. We want an answer to something, we Google it, we have it in a second. We want to feel we're giving back, we wrap our Facebook profile in the flag of the moment. Whatever it is, it's available immediately, and we don't have to work for it. So what that's doing, though, is that it's changing our relationship with time and effort, with the experience of gritting it out, of struggle. And I would say, you know, that I don't speak alone in this at all, but everything that's ever meant something to me in my life has come as a result of time and effort. Anything that really deeply is satisfying and nourishing has come as a result of hard work over time and the willingness to experience difficulty. And what we're seeing in particularly our, you know, 20s and 30s and teens and so on, millennials essentially, But even older folks than millennials is a kind of, again, a draining out of the meaning of life, because everything we're doing is, you know, just I punch a button and I get what I want. But unfortunately, immediacy and ease don't make for meaning or for really for joy, I would say. And they don't give us a sense of self-confidence. You know, all the things that really gave me inner strength, that make me know I can count on myself, came again as hard work, effort, time. And so we have generations growing up now that are not putting that into anything. And therefore, they don't really have a sense of self-esteem. They don't have a sense of meaning. They expect everything. They're entitled, but they don't really feel deeply satisfied. And at the same time, they're relying on, you know, social media for their sense of self-worth. They send out a post, they get likes back for it, they feel good for a moment about themselves. They don't get liked, or God forbid their Snapchat is not opened. You know, these can send younger people into a state of despair, total absence of self-worth. So this drive for the immediate and the easy is actually contradictory to a life of value.
So, Nancy, I'm curious, as you're watching all this happen, and I imagine you're not immune to this as either, how does it make you feel to see where we're going?
Well, you know, the thing is that I'm an eternal optimist, and I'll tell you why I'm optimistic in this moment for a couple of reasons. One is the mythology of technology is starting to crack. And by that I mean, and I'm very excited about that. I mean, I'm very excited by the response to the book in the sense of how much this is touching a nerve on people's experience. How much, I mean, so much response coming back to me about, oh my God, I'm so glad you wrote this book. This is my experience of technology, that, you know, it is not making life easier at a fundamental level. We're managing the technology more now than we ever had to manage the things that technology solves. We are not feeling more connected. There are all sorts of studies back now that say the more time spent on social media, not in physical company with others, the more lonely we feel. It is not making life feel freer. In fact, we feel more burdened, more tied to our phones. So all these stories, these narratives that we've been telling ourselves and telling each other, drinking the Kool-Aid, you know, are starting to fall apart. And so hallelujah on that. And I'm also incredibly optimistic because I feel that, you know, a lot of people take a pass and they say, well, the horse is out of the barn, or it's too late, you know, I can't make any changes. But the truth is, the revolution starts right here, right in this moment, with our own behavior. If I decide not to put that phone on the table while I'm having dinner with my friend, I've made a radical change in the whole planet, is how I look at it. And we've started a trend by saying, you know what? I don't want to make that friend feel not enough. I don't want to devalue this friendship by that small gesture, which is not small in any way. You know, there's a lot of talk again about mindfulness, but, you know, and some of these makers of apps and so on, they say, well, we can use our technology in the moment of it mindfully. But I would say it's a little bit like the alcoholic who says, well, I'm going to stay present and stay aware as I drink. But the second drink is starting to take away the awareness that would allow you to stay present. And the same thing with technology is, once we dive into the distraction of it, you know, we can't necessarily stay present to what's happening. We're also not in the place that we are actually standing. We're not feeling the wind on our back and so on and so on. So I'm excited because people are starting to choose true mindfulness over this sort of mythology of mindfulness. And the other thing that's exciting, right, is that we, as I said, in this moment, can change everything with little choices. Wake up in the morning, first half hour of the day I'm not going to use. I'm going to check into an intention for the day. Maybe I'll check into my body to remember I have a body. All these little changes people are making, because at the end of the day, it's not really working for us. The way we're relating to technology. It's not really delivering what we need to live a good life, a nourishing life. So those are really exciting things to realize.
Thank you, Nancy. Another thing that I don't know if people are truly aware of this or not, but as far as like clients, when I go into my therapy session, I've started asking my therapist to turn off her phone and I turn off mine, because some of the apps that are on our phones, when we give permission to access our camera or our microphone, we're not actually aware that some of these apps are accessing what's going on in the room, whether we're using that app or not. I've had a number of friends who have been online and they've had a private conversation about something, and then all of a sudden there is an ad that comes up related to that.
That's terrifying.
It's really happening, because these are things that they would never normally, like just totally random things that aren't connected to anything, and all of a sudden there's an ad for that.
That is very terrifying. I actually did not know that. I know other aspects of the sort of gathering of information through technology for sure. But my phone is always off, so I will actually forward that along to my clients. That's actually terrifying to hear. And I think we don't, maybe this is not so, but I think we don't have a single idea how much information is being gathered about us. And I forward that along to my children. You know, anything that you post online is it's potential for something you don't want to see later on in your life. It's and we don't want to live in a state of paranoia, but it's really real that there are a whole host of agencies and so on that are gathering information, mostly so they can sell us product, mm-hmm. so they can benefit, you know, financially from us. But who knows, as you say.
And the thing is, we might not be doing anything that we could think would make us liable for anything else, but if these corporations are collecting information in order to sell us products, if someone comes in with a warrant for that information, there could be one sentence you said 6 years ago that happened to be recorded connected to something you said 10 minutes ago that aren't at all related, and they could build a case. Like, I don't want to get paranoid, but this is actually happening. Our conversations are being listened to, and I would imagine recorded in some way, and we're not aware of it. And a lot of the times we voluntarily give up that privacy for the convenience and for the addiction to this online world.
Yes indeed. You know, here in the States, having just gone through this gigantic revelation about, you know, the kidnapping of our process here and the hacking. You know, it's a funny time, because we're also seeing how technology, so this very, very, very kind of scary thing has happened in terms of propaganda. And then we're watching as the tweeting campaign about what it means is taking hold of it and really bastardizing it and turning it into a kind of media circus about nothing. And again, people fighting about nothing. And this is a part of what's happening to us that we really need to sort of wrestle back control over, which is we're losing the capacity, it seems, to think deeply. To really step back, not know, and process something. You know, our young people, again, are growing up with the capacity to get answers to absolutely everything, to anything and everything. And yet, they are not that interested. We're losing interest as a species in how the answers connect or what the answers actually mean, or maybe we don't know yet what they mean. And so we have to actually go through this sort of arduous process of thinking about what we know. You know, now, this afternoon, a client was going up to Vermont, and I had asked her, you know, do you have any idea if Vermont is north or south of here? And she said, no, I just, you know, plug it into the GPS. I said, you know, would you have any interest in knowing? Does that mean anything to you? And she said, no, not really. I don't know why I would know. And then I, of course, followed up wondering if she had any interest in figuring that out or in the journey to Vermont and so on. No. And, you know, no judgment there. It's just we're changing. We just want the answers. We want the answers without the meaning and without a deep, thoughtful examination of what that then means. So again, we're ending up with generations of folks who feel ungrounded. They're like penthouses without basements or without, you know, the skeleton, the bones of a building. They've got all the answers, but none of it connects, and nor are they particularly interested in that. So I'm watching that as a fundamental change as well. We don't really feel we need to think much anymore.
To hear extended interviews and behind-the-scenes chat, go to my website, mariebenard.com, and sign up for my mailing list, mariebenard.com. Thanks for listening.
For Art's 1 millionth and 53rd birthday, CITR is hosting 24 hours of radio art. Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM the 17th of January from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. the 18th to hear a celebration of all that is weird in radio.
This year, featuring pieces from Bepi Crespin, Adam Frank, Chrissy P., Duncan Maunder, Hank Bold, Lee Hutzelak, Tobias, S. Asterix, Prophecy Sun, Britt Bachman, Gak, DJ Autonomy, Goulash, Peter Quartermash, Lit, Josh Gabert Doyon, Scant Intone, DJ Farmboy, and Simon Walton.
We are speaking with Nancy Collier. She is the author of The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And it's interesting, we're talking about how we post on social media and how everything is so immediate. And another thing that I'm noticing, and I do this as well, is I'll be out doing something at a party or out in nature or whatever. And rather than being present in the moment and fully just soaking in that experience, I'll be taking pictures that I might instantly post on Instagram, or I might, if I'm being really good, I'll hold off and wait to post them till after. But we don't get the full experience of that. It's just this surface facade that we put out to show everyone else what a great time. I mean, I joke that it's proof that I actually leave the house.
That's right. That's right. Look at me. I'm living a life.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in that way, this goes along with, you know, how I said before that technology and our relationship with it is changing our relationship to ourselves. Technology is also on a more profound level changing our relationship with life, because rather than being in the direct experience of life, actually experiencing where we are, we're now using life to build our brand. So every moment, right, we're separated from the moment because it's something that can strengthen our identity or build up other people's version of us, right? So we're not in that life. Or if we're not doing that, as you say, we're constantly recording our lives. I don't know why. I was recently, a couple weeks ago, in Costa Rica, and you know, I was in the rainforest, in spectacular rainforest, with a mom with her millennial girls and a couple in their 20s. And they must have taken 500 photos and missed the entire experience of being there. And, you know, I thought it broke my heart. It really did, because the separation between what they were living and what they were doing was so profound. So we're either using life to build our brand, or we're, as you say, we're using life to prove to other people that we have a life. You know, people go to their kids' dance recitals and they take thousands of pictures there. They don't ever get out from behind the lens, but then later they can show everybody, look what my daughter is doing. Look what kind of parent I am. I send my daughter to ballet class, or whatever nonsense they're trying to prove. But what we end up with, right, is we end up with 64 gigabytes of iPhoto file, but no directly lived experience, no cellular felt sense of the life that we've just been walking through. And, you know, we have this natural part of our brain, the kind of narrator. It's like we all have a biographer walking 20 steps behind us at all times, you know, narrating our life to ourselves. You know, oh, look at me, I'm having a good time here. Or, I don't really like this. Or didn't that go well? Well, now we have, you know, social media and so on as a platform for our ongoing narration. So it's like a perfect handshake between the mind, right, that's constantly telling us about our lives, and now the place to publish that information. So what do you think about what I think about my life, right? It's a perfect handshake for that nonsense, for that, I don't say nonsense, silly, I mean for that which creates suffering, which ultimately takes us out of fully inhabiting our direct experience, right? Because at the end of the day, the building of our brand, you know, check me out, I was in the rainforest, check me out, I'm traveling, check me out, you know, I'm living this fabulous life, ultimately does not translate to the feeling of living a fabulous life. It may for a brief moment when you get back the likes and the hearts and the, you know, jealous and all that, but it doesn't in a deeper way feel like a life well lived.
Mm. Thank you, Nancy. And I am curious, I mean, if we go to the rainforest or whatever and I have a camera, I feel like I've got to take some pictures. So do you have any, I mean, my guess would be maybe to say, okay, I'm going to spend the first 10 minutes taking as many pictures as I want, and then it's going off.
That's one beautiful way to handle it. Yeah, everybody does it their own way. So, you know, when we run into the sloth, take a picture of the sloth. That's great. Take a picture of the sloth and then put the camera away. You don't need 100 photos of the sloth, right? And then we run into a toucan. Take a picture of the toucan. That's great. But there is an obsession now. It's not so much just with having the photos, so later we can show people we're cool, we travel. But it's about, again, immediate validation. Immediately that goes again, captioned, you know, here with the toucans, you know, living it large in CR. You know, I was listening to, of course, the whole time them talking about that. You know, the whole thing becomes about how are we going to social media this, right? And so when you know, you're doing it so that you can be seen as somebody doing that, right, maybe that's a time to say, you know, am I okay with this? Is this kind of the way I want to be experiencing my life? Or do I want to really live this? And then later, when I'm telling people I care about or I know, right, we have to decide, we have to get uncomfortable with that part of us that is constantly singing our praises or selling our PR. You know, we're like our own PR firm now. We're constantly telling the world about how fabulous we are. So some part of us has to decide that that's not really how we want to live. We'd rather live a life where we're directly in it. Until that happens, until something in us wants that, or it feels unsatisfying in some way, or we wake up and we say, wow, I kind of missed the rainforest, didn't I? Then there isn't change until that happens.
Nancy, I had a thought about, it's almost like that, if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, does it make a sound? And if I experience something in the world and I don't post it on social media, did it happen? Does it matter?
Well, you know, you're talking about a very basic stage in psychological development. You know, when a child is under the age of five and so on, you know, the minute the mother leaves the room, the child feels like they cease to exist. So unreflected, there is no way of holding on to a sense of existing. And I write in the book about how we are, as you're insightfully pointing out, we are returning to a kind of infantile state of being where, just as you describe, if we're not reflected, we don't actually feel, not just that we don't matter, but that we don't exist. I had a client many years ago, not many because it was in this era, but who got herself x-rayed to make sure that she had bones, because her sense of non-existence was so profound that she needed a physical evidence of her existence. And this is what we're talking about. You know, when people are sobbing, they often now will go to the mirror to look at themselves to see, oh, there's an entity here sobbing, like a reminder, I am here. And this is directly related to our constant validation and reflection that now we feel is normal.
Oh, that makes me feel so sad. This is depressing, Nancy.
Well, but again, remember, the revolution starts here, right here. How, as parents, are we going to model for our children a relationship with technology? That's up to us. How, right now in this moment, I'm at the stoplight. I'm not going to check, right? I'm going to ask myself, what would I have to feel if I didn't check right now? What is it that I'm trying to get away from in this moment by checking? That, when we start to do that, what we're doing is, rather than be a victim to our impulses, rather than just be dragged around by our addiction, what we're doing is we're using that impulse, that calling to distract, as an opportunity to become more awake, to say, wow, oh, so that wants to pull me out of here, you know, get on Candy Crush. And I'm going to say, wow, what's right here? What's happening in my body? What's happening in my thoughts? What's happening in my environment? So let's use it as a red flag to come into here, into now. It's very exciting in that way to flip our impulses, flip our, you know, ultimately, you know, Marie, it's not technology doing this to us. You know, this is humans. This is a human problem. Technology is appealing to our reptilian brain. Every time we use or we check social media, we check our email or whatever it is, we get a little hit of dopamine in the reward center of the brain. And the reptile in us, you know, that part of us that, you know, is at the cruise ship buffet just binging like crazy, that part goes wild. And technology, our devices that can, you know, go to the bathroom with us, go in the shower with us, go to the funerals with us, these are incredible allies to our inner reptile. So it's our more evolved, more grown up, more aware self that has to kind of wrestle back the seat of the throne, I should say, in our inner system. And that's up to us to do. And it's very, very doable. We have to start relating to technology in a different way. Technology is not going to suddenly, you know, jump up and say, use me more wisely. We can do that if we realize, okay, so our inner reptiles has had his paws or whatever they're called, his lizard things on the device. We can take ownership of it. That's just a choice.
Thank you, Nancy. And there is more on the positive aspect of it as well. There is a whole movement of minimalism now because it's not just technology. We are overrun with stuff. Our physical world, it's just so important now to have, you know, 18 of the same t-shirt or whatever that was made in a sweatshop. And so people are, even millennials especially, are moving towards. Some of them are moving towards this more minimalistic lifestyle where they have fewer possessions and they do take more time to enjoy the moment and to enjoy the quality of experiences and the quality of the possessions that they have. Because one of the things that I think this has been studied for quite some time now is that if we have two or three options, we tend to be quite satisfied with the one option that we choose. But if we have unlimited options, whether that's shopping on Amazon, whether that's shopping for a life partner online, we never quite feel like what we have is good enough because there might be something better around the corner.
That's right. That's right. And that's been a long study with children. You know, you never give children more than two or three because they get overwhelmed. And the way people are feeling right now is, you know, we're so stuffed. We're stuffed to the gills with data, with entertainment, with choices, with, you know, opportunities and opportunities. And as you're saying, there's a huge backlash forming. You know, I love, my favorite is this travel industry that's formed where you have to pay an exorbitant amount of money to be completely off the grid and go to the most simple place, you know. And what we're craving and what we're longing for, right, are, again, the spaces and the silences. I mean, one thing that I prescribe for all of my clients is that they find 10 minutes a day to be in as close to silence as they possibly can, because silence is one of the most healing experiences for the human being. And, you know, it's stuff, it's noise, it's data, it's information, and we don't have any bandwidth anymore for what we really need. And so this minimalist movement is directly related to the opportunities that technology is making possible. That's the conundrum right there. We love opportunity. We love possibilities. We love choices. But at the same time, we really crave less. The main thing people talk to me about regarding technology is they want less. They want less noise. They want more space. They want more silence. This is what we're really craving.
Mm. I noticed the other day I was cuddling with my boyfriend, and after about 5 minutes, I felt this overwhelming, almost guilt that I should be doing something other than what I was doing in that moment, which was wonderful, connecting with my partner, getting lots of oxytocin. It's a very worthwhile activity. And yet I felt like, well, I'm not creating anything. I'm not accomplishing or building or.
Yeah. That's, you are describing exactly a modern epidemic, that the minute there is any being, I call that being, right? We go into a kind of fight or flight mode, a kind of anxiety that something needs to be happening. Something needs to be being created. You know, we have a thought these days, or we have just sort of a little inclination towards something, and immediately, you know, we're packaging it. It's turned into a something we can market. You know, we got to get on social media. We got to push it before it's even gestated at all. You know, this rush to create, this rush to be doing, you know, I have a client, you know, she's in the process of leaving her husband because every moment he has his earpiece in and has to be learning something. This sense that the moment has to be used for good purposes. And that means, you know, entertained or learned or created, and being is becoming less and less of a place that is a presence, you know, that sense of the presence of being. It feels, as you felt in that moment, like, again, an emptiness, something that we have to do something with, right? And I'm delighted that you caught it, and we're aware of it, because awareness is the key. As long as we can see, wow, oh my gosh, right, I'm draining the meaning out of this, and you can watch those thoughts that say, you know, it's time now to do, it's time to create, you know, you're not making use. You can watch those thoughts, and they'll come in and out, and they'll pass. But we have to be able to catch them. That's the whole key, and I'm glad you did.
I did, yeah, and I forced myself to stay there until it passed. But that urge, it was like nothing. And this is something that I've been noticing, especially when I'm feeling overwhelmed, which is a lot of the time, I think, for most of us these days, is that feeling that nothing I ever do, no matter how hard I work, it's just never going to be good enough.
Yeah, that's right. That's a part of the epidemic of technology. That's a consequence of technology, that there's just too much. Nothing could ever really matter. And you know, even in your, in a sense, persuading yourself to stay with your boyfriend, right? If you notice, it was because it had a purpose, you know, the oxytocin, right? So we're still in purpose mode. But what we really want to do is we want to come in, not so much from the narrator, not so much from the witness, you know, who's now justifying this other behavior because it's equally valuable, but rather to then just experience the cuddling, right? To give yourself permission, you know, we're talking about being two steps away, right? I have to create something. That's two steps away from your direct experience. This is just to, can I just experience cuddling without making a story out of it at all, purposeful or otherwise? That's a different way of living, right? Without an intention to basically become a better version of ourselves. That's our modus operandi all the time. How do we live a better life and become a better version of ourselves? But if we just say, well, maybe I could surrender and just experience what my life is actually like, then suddenly there's a whole lot of freedom.
But Nancy, I'm doing that in order to be better.
Exactly. We can't have that ulterior motive or we're still in the same game.
Okay.
Well, that'll make me more peaceful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't work.
Oh, and then I can post about how peaceful I am on social media and everyone can like it.
Perfect. Yep. #peaceful.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Nancy Collier. She is the author of The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And Nancy, we have just a couple minutes before the show ends. And so I'm wondering, if there's one thing that listeners can do right now to be, or whatever, I feel like, oh, to make the world a better place, but maybe that doesn't need to be the goal. But if there's one thing that we can do or not do today, what would it be?
One thing. Well, I think a contemplation, starting to think about, is this the way I'm behaving with technology right now? Is this really feeding me? Is this creating the kind of life that at the end of my life I'll be happy with? I will say that this was a life well used. Today we can start to ask ourselves, is this working for us? Our relationship with technology, or are we just curious? Are we curious about if there is a deeper, richer, more satisfying way of living? Today, I would start with the question, does that interest me to become more aware and more empowered in my relationship with technology? Let's start with that as a question. In my book, if the answer at all is yes, then there are many, many, many strategies and a full detox where we can look at how deeply do you want to go into that? How much do you want to use technology as a way to become more self-aware? But just starting with the question, does it feel like I could live in a deeper way? Does it feel like I could feel more peaceful? Does it feel like I'd like to feel less fight or flight, less tired? Does it feel like there might be a better way of living? I would start there.
Hmm. Thank you so much for your time, Nancy. Again, the name of the book is The Power of Off, The Mindful Way to Stay Sane in a Virtual World. And Nancy's website is nancycollier.com. And if you're watching this on YouTube, I'll post a link below. You can also hear the archive on citr.ca, where I will post a link to her website as well. And thank you so much for your time today, Nancy. Thank you for listening and for spending your valuable attention on being with us in this conversation. I hope that it has served you. And Nancy, is there anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
My delight to be here. And I'm so glad that people such as you are bringing people's attention to this very, very important topic. And we're in the process of change, and I'm delighted to be part of the dialogue.
Thank you so much, Nancy. And I just want to also add that, I mean, we use technology to get this show out there. And so we want to use technology and allow it to serve us. Just the same as our minds, we want to serve us. We don't want to be a slave.
That's it. Exactly. We want to take one line away, freedom in technology, not freedom from technology.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Nancy, and thank you for listening. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste.
Namaste.
And now, for our more dreadful sacrifice.
Who's it, huh?
The music you're listening to is completely electronic.
Only a fool would ignore this.
I'd like to demonstrate for you some of the rather more weird kinds of sounds.
See how relaxed you're getting?
Every Sunday night at 7 o'clock here on CITR 101.9 FM is More Than Human, your weekly guide to all that is new, weird and wonderful in the world of electronic music. So please join me, Gareth Moses, for electronic music old and new, inane comments and the occasional sacrifice. More Than Human on CITR.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Lawrence King.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service,
ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available,
and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support.
Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for the trans members of our community.
For Art's 1 millionth and 53rd birthday, CITR is hosting 24 hours of radio art. Tune in to CITR 101.9 FM the 17th of January from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. the 18th to hear a celebration of all that is weird in radio.
This year, featuring pieces from Bepi Crespin, Adam Frank, Chrissy P., Duncan Maunder, Hank Bold, Lee Hutzelak, Tobias, S. Asterix, Prophecy Sun, Britt Bachman, Jack, DJ Autonomy, Goulash, Peter Quartermash, Lit Lit Lit, Josh Gabert Doyon, Scant Intone, DJ Farmboy, and Simon Walton.
Ever had a hankering to ski the world-famous slopes of Whistler? Boy, do we have great news for you. Escape the city in one of Zipcar's many mountain-ready vehicles. Plus, get $30 back in free driving credit when you tweet a selfie on the slopes at Zipcar BC. Zipcar, wheels when you want them.
Rock
Rocket from Russia, weekly punk rock radio show on CITR, presented to you by Stomp Records from Montreal. Every Tuesday at 10:30 a.m. on 101.9 FM.